it'll be impossible to share with you 16 days of this trip because every moment was filled with events that some of you just can't describe without seeing. Every question that was asked by the students is something you had to have been there to hear the context, to appreciate just the genuineness of the question and the seriousness of the answer that had to be given. Just looking at the people and experiencing the weather and hearing them sing in their own native tongue, it's impossible for me to describe adequately what it's like to be with brethren in another country such as Uganda. But I thank you for the opportunity that I can at least attempt to share with you some of what happened and how your support of that cause is paid dividend, not just through sending me, but just financially, those that helped in the seminars that we conducted. It was probably one of the most productive trips that I've been on personally. And it's hard to measure productiveness because when you plant seeds, you don't know what's going to happen. It might be months and years before you see the final result. But I say productive because it was to the visual eye, immediately we saw a lot of the results. And so that's how I quantify that. But what we want to do is just take you through the whole trip pretty much day by day. That's the best way I know how. And at the end, if you have some questions, that would be fine. I was joking with someone, it's the only time you can take a trip and show home movies to the church when you're done. Who else would sit through them, right? But usually people don't want to see vacation pictures. But as you know, Uganda is in East Africa. It's a state about a little smaller than the state of Oregon. 36 million people. About 41 different dialects. Uganda is the state language along with Swahili, and then they know English. Then there are all these other dialects that are vary by the region that you're in, and that might be going from Marion County to Polk County, you'll get a whole different language. And so that's why they all pretty much speak Ugandan or Swahili or English. Now, it's bordered by Kenya to the east, to the Republic of Congo to the west, Tanzania to the south, and then, of course, Sudan up to the north. That's not always a safe place to travel up there, but Eastern Africa, for the large part, is very safe. There are exceptions in Kenya. As you know, there's been terrorist attacks there, most notably the one on the mall in Nairobi of last year. But largely, there are very few terrorist attacks in this state, which I'll describe to you in a little bit. Why go? People ask me that a lot. And there's just, you know, simple answers. The most simple one is, these are people that were created in God's image. And we're going to visit our brethren. These are your sisters and brothers in Christ. And they're hungering for further teaching in the gospel. So many of them are starving for it because they've been led to Christ. Someone took the time to share the gospel with them. But beyond that, they know very little about Christian living and the New Testament church, and some even how to worship properly. Other things they know extremely well. But then you'll have preachers that can't even tell you the books of the New Testament in order. And yet they're attempting to preach God's word to those who know even less than they do. And so without someone going like ourselves, they're going to remain largely in this ignorance. And you say, well, why don't they just read the Bible and understand it for themselves? Well, what was the question asked of the eunuch, by, do you understand what you're reading? And what was his reply? You know, how can I unless someone guide me? And that's what we're called to do, is to teach others so they can teach as well. That's why we go. And of course, you know, I'm enamored with the children there just because they give a model for really what the whole country's like, because they're all just big children. They're so warm and affectionate. I'm talking about the adults now. Very hospitable, and yet they live in poverty compared to our standards, but yet they have a genuine happiness that is hard to hide, and it's certainly hard to duplicate here in the States. So here's our team, Robin Bauer. Who was talking to me about him today? Ben, is he here? Ben mentioned Robin Bauer, and so that's funny. I just spent 2 weeks with him. He's from South Africa, and it's funny because we were talking to two young, sharp 12-year-olds on the street in Kampala. There's Ben. And they were quizzing us about all sorts of things, religious and everything. And they asked Robin, and says, you know, well, who are you? He said, well, I'm an African. He says, no, you're not. He says, well, yes, I am. Because he was born in Zimbabwe, raised in South Africa. He's African. And they go, well, your mom must have been black then if your dad's white. You know, and they're really sharp kids. He goes, no, I'm an African. You know, and they couldn't figure that out. But very energetic very person. Oliver Peter Contessi is my friend from Monroe, Washington. He's an elder. It's his first trip. Bob's always said probably the biggest joy, Bob Buchanan, I'll show him next, is his taking new people on trips like this and watching them experience it for the first time. And I finally got to experience what he meant by that. Just watching Oliver's eyes take everything in, it was just the most amazing thing, because I remember my first year, he's just going, just driving down the street, it's like, you can't believe all the things you're seeing. And then all the people you engage, and he's just that personality. He's willing to talk to anyone. And so it was very enjoyable having him around. Even though he had Montezuma's Revenge, well, that's the Mexican version of TD, if you know what I'm talking about. So, of course, everyone knows Bob Buchanan from Bowling Green. He's held a meeting here, and this is my fifth year going with him. So when we look at, I just want you to note this. They use Ugandan shillings. $1 here, 3,300, that's the current exchange rate. So when you exchange American, you only can bring $100 bills, and you get a stack, a wad, that's my wad, 13 million. Man, I felt like a real high roller. 13 million. We're just saying, well, I just spent $600,000 today, you know, and it's, well, 3,200 is about a dollar, 3,200 shillings. Why don't they just drop all the zeros? I don't know why. All right, so we arrived Tuesday after leaving Monday, so Tuesday at 11 o'clock. Our first teaching was on Wednesday at Mama Wongo, and that's right outside of Kampala. I won't have much to say about it. Then we traveled to Mbale, and where we had a preacher seminar, followed immediately by a youth seminar. And then we split up for worship. Traveled to Kasese on Friday, and there we had some work with the local church and another preacher seminar. And then Wednesday, we traveled home. So we're going to go through those days in that kind of fashion right now. So first of all, Mama Wongo is just a small little congregation that meets right outside of Kampala. Kampala is the largest city in Uganda, about 2 million people. And it's crazy. You don't want to go there. It's just so busy in the traffic. But this congregation's right on the outskirts, so it's like Kaiser is to Salem, if you would. So it's still really busy. But that's how we found it. People are peddling things in front of it. And it's a very modest building, like many of them are. Some of them are better than others. And it was a small congregation, and headed by Chris here, and we were with him 2 years ago, and so he really wanted us to come and work with his church, and we went to his house and took tea with him and his wife afterwards. But that's all I'll have to say about this group. We were there an afternoon with them. Then we left Kampala that afternoon and traveled to Mbale. You don't, there's no ma, it's Mbale. That's how you say it. I was corrected by a Ugandan, Mbale. Okay, there'll be a test later. So that was about 6 hours by bus, and those bus trips are an adventure in themselves. You don't pull over to a fast food when you're driving a bus. The fast food comes to you. we made a stop along the road, and they're raising up, these are high-decker buses, you're way up in the air, and they're lifting up Pops. This is chicken on a steak, you know, that's Chick-fil-A version, and then they have fried toasted corn and anything you want. And of course, everything's really cheap. And then Bob actually bought some Coke shirts off some people's back. I think you see these are Coca-Cola shirts because he collects Coke. But this girl is named Monica. She just randomly sat by me because I was one of the last seats. Pleasant girl that just is finishing her primary education teaching certificate in Kampala. She was going home first time for a year to see her parents for the holidays. And we talked a lot, introduced her to the rest of the team. She came to our youth seminar for a day. And then Moses Marisa, one of the preachers, is going to stay in contact with her. And, you know, so it's just interesting. People are very open and receptive to the gospel. And I'll have something more to say about that in a second. So we crossed the Nile River. It's a beautiful river. This is where it comes out of Lake Victoria, the headwaters. Then it goes, of course, all the way to Egypt, all right? And we crossed it, actually twice. We got to Mbali, and here's our hotel. It's a very nice place, and it was very inexpensive. And we rented this van from them to drive us around because you have to have some mode of transportation. And so here's where the first meeting was. It was a preacher's conference at this Kyrie complex. This is going to be the nicer buildings to meet in. And you say, well, it doesn't really look like it, but at least it had power and for a PowerPoint, and it had a restaurant in below, and it, you know, it had functioning toilet facility. So it was really nice. So we got in there, and the people already gathered. We were 2 hours late, but we met with these individuals for 2 days then, and I just want to share with you some pictures, and I'll just talk a little bit about the meeting. But these fellas, each of these pictures represents a group or a congregation or an area which they came from. So there was like 13 different congregations, and they traveled some all the way from Kenya to be there for this little seminar we put on. Some of them only had one. I'm going to start sporting a tie like that. But some of them, of course, came in groups of more. They were interesting, the whole composition of these men, because some of them were older, some very younger. Most of them been to a, quote, Bible college to study preaching. And I'll have something to say about that in a second. But they were so enthusiastic to be there, and they asked excellent questions. And one of the things that I was asked to talk about by the local group there was, how a preacher supposed to get support biblically? Now, real quickly, a preacher can work for himself. Paul made tents, right? Two, a church can support the individual. In fact, they're supposed to support their own preacher. A labor's worthy is higher. There's only one congregation in all of Uganda that we've heard of that actually supports their own preacher. Is that a problem? Now, guess where the other preachers get their support? From other congregations in United States or private individuals, or here's the problem, from colleges. And I'll explain that in a second. The third way you can get support is from other congregations, not your own. Paul said, I robbed other churches, so I didn't have to take it from you. And then thirdly, you can get it from private people. Did you realize Jesus was supported by women out of their private treasury? Luke chapter 8 and verse 2. So four ways. You say, well, I don't get any church support. Well, get a job. Is that honorable to do? You know, that's what Paul did, so he wouldn't be a burden to others. What happens, since they have this model in their mind, thinking you got to go to a Bible college to learn to preach, and when you're there, they will say, well, you go to this congregation and we'll support you there. They say, well, that's a grand idea. But then they become beholden to the college. If you don't teach their doctrine, as they would tell you, your support is cut off. And then you're left, in many ways, destitute. And so it's like as though many of them are puppets or on a string, you know? And they're just controlled by the money that comes down from them. And so this is a huge problem. They go, what do we do? Well, first you got to start teaching about the responsibility of a local congregation to support you. Well, that's very hard for me to get up and say, you need to be supporting me more than you are, right? So we came up with this idea, you go to his congregation and you let him have it. And then you go and visit his and tell him about the responsibility to support your own preacher. And they thought that was a novel idea. But that teaching is non-existent. Because they're so used to Americans providing the money. And I just say that again to emphasize the worst thing we could do, and I just see it over and over, is send them money. And the last thing we can do that's terrible is send them our culture, our movies, our songs, our celebrities. It's just ruining their society. But I won't get off on that. All right? So these people, they went back and said, with hopefully a renewed commitment to become more independent, because they lose church autonomy when they become beholden to something larger than themselves. Do you understand what I'm saying? Because now somebody else is controlling them. Oh, this is the most amazing thing here. Usually on our trips, we don't go to evangelize, door knocking, open air market preaching. But when the opportunity comes, we're all over it. And so one of the new members from the church, Mbali, it was also the chef at our hotel. His name was Ronald, nice guy. He lives in this village up on the hill. And he invited us to come up and talk to his villagers. Now, mind you, he's the only person that's part of the Lord's church, a Christian. The rest of them really know nothing. So Oliver and I left in the afternoon, Saturday, not knowing what to expect, thinking maybe we'd find, you know, half a dozen people to go talk to. And to our surprise, when we got there, we found 68 people gathered under this tarp, under a tree. And they'd been waiting for an hour for us to arrive. And we were late getting there, and so we only had like 40 minutes to teach, and we talked about Christ and his church and who he is, and they begged us to come back the next day. So we said our goodbyes and with promise to come back the next day. But they continued afterwards, and they followed us to the van. You know, I don't know, it's partly because you're Caucasian, you're a Mazunga, that's a white man. There's a novelty to that. And also it's because we were handing out Roy's Tootsie Rolls. I said, get in a line. That's the best order of a line they had. And there's Ronald handing out the Tootsie Rolls. I said, you do it. We got to go. So they mobbed him. Thanks, Roy. I was like the Pied Piper of Uganda, you know, with Tootsie Rolls. He gave me this huge bag, and I was overweight, my luggage. And so I had to take some out. But so we went back to, on Sunday, we split up. Two of the preachers stayed in the town we were in, and then Oliver and I went to Bula Kubi Church. Now, this is interesting. The reason we went there was 2 hours away, and it's because it was a new congregation. It was comprised of about 12 converts to Christ, plus a Pentecostal group that they were taught out of their Pentecostalism, all became baptized. They built a hole in the back of the property, lined it with some plastic, and they all got baptized in Christ. And these two groups merged, and now they're a church trying to serve Christ. But they know very little, and of course, they're bringing their backgrounds with them, and so they asked us to come out and talk about, you know, the church and about Christ. It was a real pleasure to do so. It was a homemade building. As you can see, they make the bricks. It's still a dirt floor, homemade benches. As that is typical with a lot of these groups, the women sit on one side and the men sit on the other. It's not because anything but cultural traditions, that's all. Because sometimes men will sit over there if there's not enough room. But as culturally, you'll see all throughout East Africa, the women are dressed so nicely. It's just they take a lot of pride in their colorful garments. And Oliver and I were debating whether we should bring one of these back for our wives. And Nah, I don't think they would wear it. But at the end, they said, would you stay just for a cup of water? It'll just be a small cup, but we'll send you off with that. So we're thinking, Matthew 25, whoever gives a cup of water to the least of these, give it to me. So they bring in these tables with a full meal. And they say, it's little, but, you know, to them, you know, it was maybe over the top because they couldn't afford a lot, but it was very gracious of them. So we were late getting back, to say the least, back to our town. This is for the teachers. How many teachers raise your hand? All right, three of you now. When I walked by this, behind this is a building where it's a housed livestock and some pigs. Do you know what that is? It's a chalkboard. They teach the village kids right here. And I blew this up so you can read it. Name one crop grown in swampy area. What's the answer?
Rice.
Rice. Very good. You won't know this one. Who is the president of Uganda? Well, I didn't expect you to know it. But so this is their chalkboard that they have class in front of it with the pigs behind the wall. And that's the extent. I had to take a picture of it. You know, so you get a feel for the culture in which we're living. They do the best they can with what they have. No excuses. No excuses. That's all you got? Right on it. Teach your kids. So we made it back to Mbali, and I saw this picture of this truck. This is plantain. It's a cousin to banana. It's in the banana family, but you don't eat it raw. You can't. You have to either cook it or bake it or something like that. But it's a staple. It'd be like our potatoes that we boil and eat potatoes. They eat plantain, and plantain. And I'll introduce that so you can see it later. So here they're bringing it in, and people grow it on their own property and ship it to the cities. A bunch of that out in the villages is about 17,000. Here it might be 30,000. You say, well, that's a lot of money. Well, 30,000, you know, it's $9 or something like that. So it's not that much, all right? So after Sunday was over, we went to a school facility, which we were allowed to use, a private school building, and we had started a youth seminar. This is their third or fourth one they had, 11, 2012, 13, 14, fourth one. And it was in this city, and they promised 100, we expected 40 to 50. We got 80. And that's just marvelous. And they spent the night, these three nights. It was Monday night, Tuesday, Wednesday, then Thursday we finished. And I'll be honest. I'm thinking, this is a long time to spend with youth when we could be dealing with adults. Shame on me. Shame on me. They were the most attentive. They asked the best questions. They wouldn't ask them publicly. They wrote them on papers, and I have all of them. I saved them and brought them home. And they sat in this hot room with a tin roof all day long. Look, isn't that a nice bow tie? Steven is here. He wears one of those. This girl lost her leg in a motorcycle accident. It's a boda-boda. It's a method of transportation. And so her prosthesis was just a solid leg. She'd swing around. Didn't let her stop her. She was there. And this is their posture from 8 o'clock till 5 o'clock with breaks for lunch. We fed them lunch. And it wasn't, they're not sleeping. They were attentive the whole time. Now, partly it's their culture, the way they're raised. When you're in class, you listen. There's no disciplinary problems like we have here. But part of it is, it's just they were interested in spiritual things. One of the assigned topics I had was premarital sex. Why wait? I say, why would you talk about that? I'll just show you this. Here are some statistics I shared with them. There's an epidemic of single mothers in Uganda. I think it's right here. We'll see another one. Where's it? Every year, 1,000 single mothers report a case of child neglect. Where's the other number? Here it is. There's one out of four females aged 5 to 19 give birth to a child outside of marriage. 91% of the world's HIV-positive children are in Africa, and that's after we have spent billions of dollars to send, you know, help with the AIDS epidemic. More than 1 million die children every year in Africa. It's a huge problem. South Africa, Robin is telling about it, there's just burials all the time. The average life expectancy in Uganda is 50 years old. And a lot of people die therefore at 45. And it's a leading cause of death among youth. It's preventable. But it hasn't stopped them from having premarital sex. Morality is a huge issue there, and there's several reasons. One, dowries. If you were going to get married to a beautiful thing you saw, you would have to pay her her father a dowry. And what's a dowry? It depends on if it's the first daughter or the second daughter and how beautiful and how smart she was. It might be 3 cows or 8 cows. Now, cows are worth a lot of money. So we're talking about, to them, maybe in our language, $2,000, $3,000, $4,000. You don't have that. So what do? If you can't pay the dowry, well, you just have sex and move in together. And then when there's a baby, what does the guy do since they're not married? He leaves. It's a huge problem. One of the questions one of the girls asked, he says, my dad left my mother. My mother has lots of health problems. I met a guy who's older than me, and he's helped support me and help take care of some of our medical bills. Now he wants to have sex. Should I let him have it? Is that a good question? And it was sincere, because she felt obligated. Of course, the answer was, of course not. Are you a prostitute? Would you sell your body to someone? Well, no. Well, then if he loves you, ask him to marry you. Then he can have your body and enjoy it as a gift, because that's what God intended it for. But they would ask, is it okay to date if you're not going to have sex? Because they have this idea that if you date someone, that means you have to have sex. They don't understand the idea of courtship. And things that might be obvious to us, the youth don't grasp them. It isn't taught them. And so a lot of this was novel, the idea of waiting and giving yourself to your future husband or wife as a gift, because that's what it is. Maybe we'll share that lesson, because there's some very interesting things to say out of it. They had excellent questions, these youth. Everything from about Christianity to morality, telling truth, lying, how to dress. Well, we went back up to Mioni village. And when I got there, Nathan said, come follow me. He wanted us to go visit a man who had dislocated his hip because he took a fall. So Oliver and I took off. It's a beautiful village. It's like paradise, but look at the homes in which they live. We traveled and we walked. And these are bananas, but most of these are plantain bushes. That's what they grow on. We kept going, and Oliver's going, where are they taking us? Are they going to mug us when we're out there? And we finally got to this place right here, and here is the house in which David lived. David had had a troubled life, living in poverty. Somehow he found enough alcohol to become an alcoholic. He had quit that for the last 3 months, had broken or dislocated his hip, and he'd heard some teaching that Moses had done earlier, and he wanted us to visit him and talk to him about the gospel. When you go there, you eat their food. When you go there, you don't show expression when people are dirty or smelly. When you go into people's homes, you don't show any expression of, because this is how they live. You don't want to embarrass them. But I couldn't help myself when I entered this guy's place. It was so dark, but I set my camera settings on the best, and it was dark, I couldn't even see his face. But he's living in a little 8x8, and you can see it's mud with holes in the wall, grass roof, and he's laying on the ground, and there's no one to care for him. And they thought it was broken, but now they term it as a dislocated hip. And he hadn't eaten for a day and a half. He said, well, who's caring for you? And his mother was the one caring for him. And she was old herself and crippled and in poverty. So we gave them some money for a meal. And he said, I want to be baptized into Christ. Well, that's how we left them right then, making arrangements to come back later. We got back and we found not 68 people in the village, this time 108 people. This is our second meeting. They knew nothing about us except people had talked to other people, so you got to come. And we talked more about Jesus Christ. And we spent an hour this time. And they asked us back again, so we said, we'll come back next Tuesday. And so we made plans to do that then. But the children, but mostly adults, and they asked wonderful questions, and it's like they've never heard it, the gospel before, and that's because they hadn't. Of course, we took a picture afterwards. So back to the youth seminar. Some of you put things in a box that Lynn shipped, packaged up to take to Bob's, and we handed out. And there's soaps from like hotels and stuff. And some people put Bibles. Someone put a brand new King James Bible in that box. I don't know who you were. Those girls read that Bible every day on the front row. That's it right there. And it's the first Bible that one girl had, and they were looking at it, well, all three of them, and they're just looking at it. And looking at every scripture we mentioned, they opened it up and were reading it. And it was like candy to them because they hadn't had probably an opportunity to read like this. Well, I tease Oliver because I worked really hard, you know, in my teaching. And, well, I'm getting ahead of myself. We went up that day after we were done teaching and went and got David. We had to carry him off the mountain to a van, then carry him down to a river. And this is the river. It was very, very muddy. And, of course, we took him in and we baptized him. And three people were baptized that day from the village. And I just want to share this with you. While those three people, there was more and more interest. We couldn't get there the next time because it would rain and we couldn't get up the muddy hills. But they met today for the first time as a congregation of the Lord's Church in the Mione village. And Joseph Moses from another place came over and helped them conduct their services. You know, and that's why you go. That's why you go. And hopefully with time and support, you know, they will continue to grow. The youth seminar ended, and it was a wonderful experience. And I teased Oliver because he got up and did his lesson. Of all things, it was on the Godhood. And as soon as he was done, two kids in the back said, we want to be baptized. He says, wow, you know, here I preach my heart out and no response at all. Oliver just does this thing. He's a rookie and gets two people. Then all of a sudden two hands, well, I want to get baptized too. Ended up 15 people want to get baptized. And we're talking old people to younger. So we took them aside and it's asked them the question, shared with them why they're getting baptized. They all knew the right answers. And so we made another trip to the river. And quite a walk, and you can imagine what this looked like. People, where are they going? What are they doing? And one after another, we baptized these people in this muddy river. And it was quite an experience. And they'll go back some. They were friends that came to the seminar with friends, but they weren't Christians. And they'll go back to their respective congregations and worship with them. So that was Mbali. And then we traveled in the next day back to Kampala. By bus, and then we hired a van to go to Kasese, which is about, it took 6.5 hours by van. A bus, it would have been 8 or 10. It's in the highlands. They grow tea, beautiful tea plantations. They grow coffee, and there's Lake Queen Elizabeth National Park, where you go on a safaris right outside of town. We weren't able to do any of that because we were there to worship, I mean to work. I showed this picture, and you go, well, why would you show a picture out the front of your van? Because when you blow it up, what do you see as far as you can see?
Paved road.
Huh? It's a paved road. That is a good thing. People walking. We're way out in the country, and you can't go anywhere without seeing people walking. You know why? That's how you get somewhere. You don't have cars. You can't afford transport. And so if you want to get there, what do? You walk. And a lot of them have these big old vintage bicycles with big wheels, and they're loaded with lumber. Saw one with a bed on the back, and they're just pushing it up these hills and with plantain loaded. That's how they transport things or get them to market. No excuses. There's nothing too far. There's nothing that can't be done if you have the will to do it, and they do it. It's just amazing. It's something you have to see. It doesn't matter where you are. Here's the hotel we stayed in, and it boasts one of the nicer hotels. I think it was $13 a night, so to give you an idea of the expense. Here's where you get on the internet. It's right above. If you didn't sit right under it, you're not going to get a connection, and even then, it didn't work half the time. That's all of Uganda, so it's not just this hotel. Here is the five-star chef in the back. I'm serious. They had seminars, and they'd host people. The United Nations was doing a Save the Child conference out in the front, and they're cooking dinner for them in the back, and this is how they cook, under pots over stone and wood fire. This is so typical of anywhere you go. They don't have culinary kitchens like you and I have. So can you make sure the volume's up? I just wanted to show you this. Oops. The last time I tried to do this, it didn't work, right? It's not working, is it? Let's try it one more time. So they're cooking plantain there. That's why I introduced you before. It's wrapped in banana leaves. And this is where you and I would cook at a campout, right? This is, look at the nice chef smock he has on. They're serious about this. You know, it's not, see, so I just wanted to share that with you. Some people say, is it safe? Can anyone read what it says on a shirt? This is a security guard into the entrance of the hotel. They all have them, every hotel, every public place. CT, what does CT mean? Anyone guess? Counterterrorism. It's like, whoa, all of a sudden we got scared. He said, why do you have counterterrorism? Is there a problem here in Uganda? He goes, no. Well, then why do you have a counterterrorism officer at every place? It's because we do a really good job. That's why there is no terrorism. I mean, he just was laughing with it. They don't have terrorism. But yet the country has counter-terrorist officers at every public building where white people go to especially.
Jack, didn't they have a rather large terrorist attack at one of the malls there?
That was in Nairobi in last year, Kenya. They had one. The last one was in 2011, he talked about. And so it wasn't. So I just wanted to share that with you. You would feel very safe there. It's like going to Amity. That's pretty close. No, it's more like going to Seneca in Eastern Oregon, if you know where Seneca is, or Dayville. All right. Yeah, John knows what we're talking about. All right, here's the preacher seminar of the Maliba Church. We're running out of time. We met with the congregation as a whole. This young man was so attentive, and here was the group. There was like 62 people, or I think there was more than that. That was on Saturday. Then we went to the market, and I just have to give you a flavor of what goes on there. Does anyone know what this is right here? That's right, it's an iron. You fill it with coals out of a fire, close the lid, and you iron. I almost brought one home for Ann. But again, no excuses. You don't have electricity? No problem. Can you get things ironed and do they look nice? Yes. You do whatever it takes to get the job done. How about local, organic, and sustainable? Fresh from the... That's a slaughtered goat you bought in the market. And everything is there from the head to the entrails, all right? And then here's beans. Aren't those colorful? I helped them clean their beans to get the pebbles out of them. And they ended up in our meal that we provided for the attendees of the conference. And some of you helped pay for that meal. I just want you to know that. Cooked in the same manner as the others. Now, again, the preacher seminar, they were from all over. The thing I want to note about here is we talked about elders. There's only one congregation that I know of in all Uganda that has an eldership. So they asked the other question, is it okay for the larger church in the city to have oversight over us? Well, of course, no. But concepts, they were good questions, because it's natural to look to the larger congregation for leadership when you don't have your own. But they never heard the concept of eldership and local authority and shepherding the flock among yourselves and the job of an elder. So important to them, and it planted these seeds in their mind of what a mature church would look like. And I wish I had time to share a lot of the questions with you of what they talked about. What I think, these men sang in their native tongue, so I don't know the words, but I just want to give you a feel for how they sing a cappella, you know, their praises to God. And notice they're singing parts. You can hear the men singing, some of them singing. Don't know the words. Can you imagine if you do know the words, would that be uplifting and edifying? It's so simple, it's so spontaneous in many ways, and it comes from their hearts. They love to sing. Let me share you what happened out of this one. These men. There was a fellow that came to our hotel who was in town to do business. He lives 170 kilometers away. His name was Ronald as well, surprisingly. He had founded his own church, Our Savior something, I don't remember what it was. We invited him to the seminar. He came with his wife. Bob was waiting for him to show up, and we agreed as soon as he got here, you would teach your lesson on the description of the church. He spent 3 hours. He does an excellent job. After 3 hours, the person said, I got to go home because I have a four-hour ride, but I've never heard the Bible teaching like that. You have to come to my village. I will have my congregation gathered, and I can guarantee 400 people will be there to listen. Well, the problem was, it was Wednesday, and that's the day we traveled home on a plane. But he was so affected by what he heard in the truth. Now, that's not just one person. Robin is very forceful from South Africa. I don't know if it's just his personality or his culture. But when there was error, or people didn't understand him, and the truth was brought out. These men, there was questions, honest questions, but they were so receptive to the truth. They said, well, if that's what it says, that's what we're going to do. There wasn't the pushback that you get in the States from people that just want to argue, well, we've never done it that way, and we're not going to change. There was just this genuine openness to wrestle with the truth, and if that's what it says, they had good questions. They didn't accept it blindly. But they went away and said, well, that's what we got to start doing. One young man started crying. He was a preacher. Broke down crying. He said, I got to start all over. It's like, I don't know the Bible. That's why we go. So we can teach faithful men who want to teach others also. So the gospel can continue in its perpetuity as someday all of us will leave this earth. But the gospel will abide forever. There's some plantain. That's how you take it to market. No excuses. And I don't care if it's bored. He's the driver, actually. No, he's not. We were going down the road and said, oh, look, there's two goats behind that boda-boda. That's a boda-boda. The guy had two goats on his back, then realized there's a passenger, then the driver, and the driver had two goats in the front. There's four goats, you know, going down the road. And then we passed another one on this dirt road and said, boy, that baby's crying. It doesn't like its motorcycle ride. And look at it, it's not a baby, it's a pig. You know, the worst part is when they carry lumber this way, like 10-foot pieces of lumber, And here they're on a motorcycle going and just wiping out pedestrians. You know? It's the children. They got this infectious enthusiasm that stays with them as they grow as adults. And this little girl here is standing on her deformed leg. This leg is bent because it's normal, but this one's deformed. It's a deformed foot, no hand there, and a deformed hand there. She followed me wherever I went. We went through the market, and she followed me all the way through it. At one time, she started lagging behind, and Oliver said, let's wait up. I said, no, let's keep going. And she caught up with us at the next spot. I gave her a Tootsie Roll. And she took that Tootsie Roll, this is a little stick she was carrying around, and there's her limb here. And I go, how is she going to unwrap this? She took that Tootsie Roll and put it on her stump and put it up to her lips and undid the paper with her lips and her teeth. I almost reached to help her. I go, no. Why destroy that spirit? This girl does not understand the word handicapped. It's not in her vocabulary because she jumped and hopped on one leg as fast as the boys ran. Now that's the spirit that you find in Uganda when people are living in poverty. Yeah, prosperity is a blessing here in the United States, but in many ways it's our curse, isn't it? So I thank you for sending me, and I thank you for being so attentive, but that's what you helped bring about this trip. And Lord willing, I have some emails. We're going to send more literature, trying to get some translated in their language, and we'll keep in touch with these young men who are trying to preach God's word, and they can ground some of these new Christians. So there's our lesson. Any questions? We're just right on time. If you want to ask things privately, that would be wonderful. I just want to say thank you, though, for letting me go. Yes?
I'm so impressed.
Yeah.
Thanks for showing.
Well, and really, I feel like Paul, someone else waters our plants, we water. It's really not us. It's this treasure we have, truly, in these earthen vessels. And all we're doing is just transporting it to them. And you really feel so insignificant. I mean that. Because you see what the word's doing and the love of Christ doing for these people. It really makes a difference. Yes?
Is there any particular part of the Bible that came to your mind as you had this experience over in Uganda? Something that maybe you had read over previously, but that experience allowed you to be more insightful to you now?
Well, the one I started with, the first one that comes to mind, because that verse kept popping up. People would say it. Things you've heard in the presence of many witnesses, entrust these to faithful men that they might be able to teach others also. It's kind of a mission. I wanted to preach about the prodigal son and then the God's love, didn't get a chance to. They asked a lot of questions about Revelation. Imagine that. Anything you can imagine they asked, but it needs feet on the ground. And I thought of Paul. We preach about Paul. He was not a traveling evangelist like we think. He was a located preacher. He stayed in Ephesus 3 years. He stayed in Corinth for many, many months. Philip was in Caesarea for 20 years. They need someone to stay there for more than 2 weeks. I was impressed with that. You need feet on the ground for a long time, a period of time. All right. Yes?
Just a quick comment, Jack. Having gone on one trip with you and Bob, I guess my comment would be that I wish everybody here could go at least one time to a third world country, and you would realize how blessed we are here in the United States.
Yeah, that's right. And it would change you, just change you when you come back, and in a good way. And it'll make you appreciate what you have here, enjoy what you have here more. So I invite you to come along sometime. Lord willing, some of you can. Well, if you hear it and you realize, man, I need to be more connected with my Lord and God, that's what it's all about. You die at 50 there. They're looking for something more substantial, just food, shelter, and clothing. And they find that in Jesus Christ. It's a promise of life eternally. And that's the same promise we share, isn't it? And obviously, you have faith in God, you wouldn't be here. Let's be passionate about it. One of the comments, this is the one I'll say, Jeff. It's going to stick with me. A person closed with this comment saying, just like Paul told husbands to love their wives as Christ loved the church. I go, why is he talking about husbands and wives? He says, just as Christ loved the church. He says, Christ loved his church. You know what it says? Husband, loves your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for. He said, brethren, we must love the church. Love it. Like Christ loves it, like his bride. And if someone spoke evil of your bride, BJ, would you stand for it for a second and run it down and say negative things? Shame on us when we talk bad about the church. Let's love the church. Let's speak well of it and try to build it up, correct the problems that are there. Nurture her like a husband is supposed to nurture his wife. I'll carry that one for a long time. Do I have a love of the church? Yeah, I have a love of God. I have a love of Christ, but do I have a love for his church? And that's what we are, isn't it? So I'll share that with you. If you're with us and you want to become Christ's body or you need to make some kind of confession, make yourself right with the Lord, won't you come as we stand and sing?